It's the Jeremiah Show. Tearing back the curtain on the hospitality, music, and entertainment industry with insider tips and the hottest global guests in the biz. With Dr. D and special LA personal development commentator Mike Gormley. He's a restaurant and bar fixture, a partner with legendary rock star drummer Mick Fleetwood in Fleetwood's on Front Street in Maui, and he's your radio host. And now, from a race around the sun, Jeremiah Higgins.
Welcome to the Jeremiah Show. Dr. D, how you doing this week?
Doing very well. Thank you very much.
Yeah, I'm enjoying hungry. This fall weather. Hungry.
Oh, hungry and nice and cool. I'm enjoying it. I now have my travel trailer ready to go.
Yeah, you're ready to hit the road.
Travel.
28 footer?
No, 20.
20 footer.
20. Don't add another 8 feet. It'll create more problems for licensing.
Okay. Don't mention it at all.
That's right. There you go.
Yeah, so you're hungry, and we've got a restaurant opening up here soon for you. Excited
really?
To tell you all about it. We have a very special guest from that restaurant, that said restaurant. Okay, let's get right to it. A restaurant is not just a menu, the four walls, and the idea, but rather a multi-layered tapestry of the owner's history, their travels, experience, and taste. Consider... A restaurant has had an entire past existence, a life before its birth. A restaurant is the sum of its owners, its birth parents. The person who takes on the daunting feat of opening a restaurant is a courageous and fearless soul indeed. They are no fool. They understand all too well the odds are against them. But yet, something drives them to share their view of the world with us. To share their idea of community through their food and their drink. They bring their love to you for your approval. What makes this man, this woman, open themselves up both personally and financially to our critique, our judgment? Dominic Sheikh, born in Queen Charlotte's Hospital in North London, one of the four hospitals established in Greater London in the mid-18th century. Is my pronunciation not right? Did I not do that?
Very good. It's your research I'm impressed by. Okay.
Hey, we research here on the Jeremiah Show.
Wikipedia fun?
Deep dive. Yeah, deep dive to the very first page on Google. All right. Queen Charlotte's was a popular choice for London's more affluent mothers-to-be, and it can be safely assumed that the hospital was carefully chosen to welcome into the world the Sheikh's young prince, their firstborn son. Your free spirit and... socialite mother was born in Rhodesia, Africa, which was a de facto successor state to the British colony of Southern Rhodesia. Dominic, is that correct?
That's correct.
Your father was born in Scotland, the seventh chairman of the McCallan Scotch family, and a famous screenwriter in Hollywood. Your father used two names, one to run the Scotch Empire and one to pen his screenplays. Alan Sheikh ran McCallan Scotch. Alan Scott wrote screenplays and ran the Screenwriters Guild in Hollywood. He was nominated for BAFTA's Alexander Korda Award for Best British Film and a Genie Award for his 1997 film Regeneration. He's won the Edgar Award and Writers Guild Award. Later, a brother and a sister would join you in your idyllic childhood, as you described it, traveling between London, the estate in Gloucestershire, which was named one of the best eight houses in Britain, to your family homes in France and Los Angeles. This is where we pick up the story with our very special guest today, filmmaker and restaurateur Dominic. Hi, Dominic.
Hello, Jeremiah.
How much of that did I get right there?
No,
and I'm sorry if I
you bang on,
smiled a little bit when I say your last name. I'm still getting the
getting this guttural sound.
Yeah, so do it for us so we get a
Sheikh.
Sheikh.
Yes, but I wouldn't normally introduce myself with that correct pronunciation.
So you would normally introduce yourself
Sheikh.
As
Sheikh. I make it a hard C. It's a lot easier. It's still too difficult for people to get right, but it makes it a little simpler.
Okay, well, I didn't mean to giggle through that a little bit. We just played an opening song. It has a special meaning for you. And can you tell us why that song has a special meaning?
Was this the bagpipes?
Yes.
Well, obviously, it's very emblematic of my home country, Scotland. And indeed, you know, it's, hearing the bagpipes, A, I like the sound of them, but B, it also, you know, there's a twinge of pride as well whenever I hear them.
Yeah.
And actually, the piece of music you chose is Scotland the Brave, I think, performed by a South African troupe of pipers. So you're bringing my mother and my father together with that piece of music. Coincidental or intentional, who knows, but still works.
I think it happened, and then you picked up on it, and I'm glad it happened. So you had we spoke a little bit, and you said you had a pretty happy childhood. And can you share some of these memories of this childhood with us, with the listeners?
Well, I think, like a lot of people, my memories are pretty much sunny memories. You know, those are the memories one has. There always seems to be sunshine in one's memory. But it also it was by any standards idyllic. I mean, a very happy household. My parents are to this day still married now, that happiness trickled down, let's say, to all of us. And you know, we were living in this magical little cocoon, this world of privilege, no doubt, but made aware of our good fortune and our privilege.
Mm-hmm.
And just shipped from one of these, as you said in the intro, from one lovely part of Britain to another lovely part of Britain, or to France, mm-hmm. or to the Los Angeles. I mean, it was a magnificent childhood.
Well traveled.
Yes, but well traveled, well fed.
Yeah. Did you like traveling with your brother and sister, mom and dad?
Yes, I loved it. It was always fun. My mother, and for the long journeys particularly, mum always packed bags of goodies for us, which we weren't allowed to open until the plane had actually left the runway. And then beds would be made for us on the floor. This is obviously in the days when a child could sleep on the floor without any...
And there was enough room on the plane?
There was in those days. Yeah, the gaps, yes.
I remember.
Not nowadays. No. There were 40 years ago. It was very different, travel in the air.
Your uncle ran Macallan Scotch, and then he died suddenly at age 38, if I've got that correct.
Yes.
And your father took over as chair.
Yeah, my father had always been a director of the company. Both he and his brother became directors, I think, when they turned 21. And those were in the days before when Macallan was a privately held company. They were, my uncle indeed took the company public. And it was always supported by, and he sought counsel from my father. But my father was a busy man with a family and a large writing career. So when his brother died, my father did step into the void, what was going to be anyway, a temporary period. But it ended up, rather than being a year, it ended up being 18 years until the company was bought.
Your father's such an interesting man. He had this duality, these two roles.
Yes.
Can you explain those a little bit?
Well, yeah. I mean, he. A lot of this, of course, happened when I was away at boarding school. I went to an idyllic time at boarding school too. He would wake up in the morning, and the first half of the day, he would be whiskey industry. Certainly, if he was in the UK, and so if the phone rang and someone asked for Alan Sheikh, he would know that it was whiskey related. If they asked for Alan Scott, he would know it was film related. But he divided his day into two, because in the afternoons,
very clever.
Yeah, and when in the afternoons was as when Los Angeles and Hollywood would be waking up in their morning, he would switch hats, and that's when he would turn to his movie career.
I wanted to plug your father has a new. He's still in the movie business.
Yes, he is. Yep,
he's got a new. Just sold a new show to
Netflix.
To Netflix,
shooting it right now. It's called The Queen's Gambit, And it's a 5-part series, which will be broadcast on Netflix next year.
Do you watch that show Succession at all on HBO?
Have you seen that? No.
I've been watching and following it, and I've watched it, and I imagine maybe this is what your life was a little bit like with these kids that grew up in this. It's a media empire, but what was it like to grow up in that? What, 1824, if I've got it correctly, with McCallum?
Was founded.
I mean, that's a many, many generations of much history.
Yeah, it was an ongoing concern. It wasn't a big deal. Certainly when I was little, McCallum wasn't available outside of Murrayshire, north of Scotland. I mean, and then in the early 80s, it would be available, I think, in Harrods, but very few places. And then during the 80s, under my father's stewardship, they had a very, very successful advertising campaign. And between the advertising campaign and the quality of the product, which was, quite frankly, has always underpinned McCallum's success, was its quality, it took off. But again, I was not really privy to all that. I was doing things with my friends at boarding school, illicit things probably. But
with a bottle of Macau.
Well, yeah, I wish, no. Bells probably.
So when you were growing up, you had some interesting stories about time in London, I believe, and the home that you lived in.
My home?
This is during the IRA bombing campaign.
Of course, yeah. In the early 1970s, when mainland the UK was targeted by the IRA, we lived in a part of London where we were surrounded by an awful lot of those in government. Indeed, specifically, the British Home Secretary lived next door to us, and on the other side of our house was another member of the Conservative cabinet. And consequently, there were police stationed outside our home because they were protecting the homes of MPs. And unbeknownst to us children, but we had to check every morning. It was a game as far as we were concerned, but we had to check underneath my mother's car every day before going to school to make sure there were no bombs attached to the underside of the car.
Oh my God.
Quite frequently, you know, mistakes are made even by those brilliant terrorists.
I love first that the kids make it a game.
it was made a game for us because my parents didn't tell us in actuality what we were doing. Right. They would scare the hell out of us.
Right. I mean, that's incredible.
Yeah.
So I want to also point out the music on this episode, Dominic, you so kindly gave to us to put in. It's really a great soundtrack. It might be one of my favorite that we've put up. So I just wanted to mention that. So tell me about, you mentioned in the beginning that the sun that you see, you look back in your past, your memories, it's sunny.
Yeah.
Your family worked on one of the family homes that we mentioned at the top, and you have these memories of putting on life jackets and some of the memories that you have, I think, are just really beautiful.
It was a magnificent mill house in the Cotswolds of the UK. And it was kind of fallen into rack and ruin. Indeed, half of it was a functioning kind of factory manufacturing brake cable. So it was an act of love and devotion to convert the house into a livable space. And it took about 10 years or more to do so. But my sister and I, of course, because it was a mill house, obviously were on a river. Indeed, part of the river ran right through the house, through the hallway of the house. You could look down and see fish. But my sister and I, certainly in the summer times, would put on life jackets and, you know, as children, you don't feel the cold in the way one perhaps does as an adult. And we'd jump into the river and spend the day literally floating several miles downstream, just letting it.
So nice.
You know, not seeing another person or, you know, the odd cow we would cruise past. And then my mother would pick us up at an agreed spot further downstream later on in the afternoon and drive us home.
And your mother was a free spirit, as you described her. Yes, she was.
Yeah, she was an actress, which I think, you know, tend to go hand in hand. I mean, she stopped acting once she and my father decided to have a family. Her career was short-lived, but she shone bright, though, in the brief period that
She would pack special treats for the long trips and the travels, and that you kept a, which I want to get into a little bit later, but a diary of your guests and your parties, where they would sit, what they would eat. Did your mom help cultivate this love for and passion for food,
without
socializing and parties
and
eating.
100%. My whole family. I mean, the feast and at both the middle of the day and at the end of the day were times when everyone came together and. Lunches could last hours. And as kids, they were wonderful. You know, we were always at the table. We were never kind of, it wasn't kind of children to be seen but not heard. It was children was part of the family. And often we would be involved in just helping prepare. I mean, it was very much everybody helping together to make the feast as good as it could have been, both in the kitchen and then at the table.
Very special. And we are talking with our guest today on The Jeremiah Show, filmmaker and restaurateur Dominic Sheock. We'll be right back after this break. When we get back, we're going to talk about The Daisy. You're opening a new restaurant here in Santa Barbara. We'll be right back after this quick break.
Open in October. Welcome to The Daisy, a fun and casual environment in the heart of downtown Santa Barbara's Cultural Arts District. Great food, great feel, great friends. With friends or make some new ones while eating thoroughly cooked and carefully selected foods. Fabulous wine and beer selections, house-smoked meats, plant-based foods, farmers market produce and nuanced flavors. A place to sit and drink a cup of coffee while reading a book, but also a place to go with a group of friends for a night of great food and wine in a vibrant atmosphere. A sophisticated yet laid-back vibe. The Daisy, 1221 State Street in Santa Barbara. On the web at thedaisyrestaurant.com. On Instagram, the_daisy_restaurant. And Facebook at facebook.com/thedaisyrestaurant.
You know you smile, woman. You treat me so darn, darn fine. Give me such an appetite, and I need you loving every night. Your love gets sweeter every day. 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 Baby, when you kiss my lips, make me wanna go head over heels for you, yeah. When you whisper in my ear, what I say is how I feel for you, yeah. Your love gets sweeter every day. Your love gets sweeter every day. Your love gets sweeter every day. Your love gets sweeter every day.
Hi, I'm Wendy Knott, author, artist, and uplifter, and you're listening to Jeremiah's Show. I've just written a book called From Mutt to Magic. It's changing the stories of the day into joy and magic and inspiration. So thanks, Jeremiah.
Did you know that binge watching is bad for your brain?
What?
Crazy. Binge listening is way better. Binge listen to all of our shows on iTunes/podcast/The Jeremiah Show.
You're listening to The Jeremiah Show with Dr. D. Find all of our past shows on iTunes, podcasts, The Jeremiah Show.
Hi, I'm Brooke Williamson, Top Chef Season 14 winner, and you're listening to The Jeremiah Show, so don't go away.
Thank you.
waiting for you, Dr. D. I'm always waiting.
I know.
Welcome back to the Jeremiah Show. We're talking to our very special guest today in studio, filmmaker and restaurateur of the new restaurant in town everybody's talking about. Can't wait to open the Daisy, Dominic Shiak. Dominic, welcome back.
Thank you.
Good to have you here. Where did you meet your wife, Carmen, who is your co-partner in the Daisy and executive chef?
We met at a party in Los Angeles, a party that was convened to watch a Mike Tyson fight in August 1995. I'm not sure. It might have been the one where he bit the ear off his opponent, but I can't quite remember.
Evander, was that?
Yeah, Evander Holyfield. Yeah. I can't remember. It was one of the two fights against him.
Oh, so there was blood and fight and party, huh?
Yeah, I was distracted by my wife, though. I didn't really watch much of the fight. Well, she's my wife now. She wasn't at the time, of course. And my distraction was noticed by my then girlfriend, who wasn't overjoyed either.
Yeah, so when you saw Carmen,
yes,
who has the nickname, by the way, the Daisy. That's how you name
Daisy,
the restaurant.
Yes.
Yeah, Daisy. When you saw Carmen, love at first sight, was there a halo around her? Stars?
Love, not so much, but certainly a halo in lust and yeah, everything else that accompanies physical desire. But oddly, though, she and her fiance at the time happened to become very good friends. And Carmen and I were friends for a long, long time before we actually found each other.
It's nice. So you had a long friendship, which is, they say, the best relationships are built on the friendships,
absolutely,
right?
And our friendship was formed over those years, normally in a restaurant of one sort or another. I mean, so I suppose it's kind of kismet.
Yeah. So how did she get the nickname the Daisy before we talk about that?
It's to do with a very, very brief pair of cut-off jeans she was wearing one day. If anyone's seen the Dukes of Hazzard, they'll know what I'm talking
Daisy
about.
Daisy Dukes. Yeah. So these were your friends, the kind of named her.
It was a name that stuck for obvious reasons. And and so anyone from sort of 1995 onwards in Los Angeles, anyway, she was known as Daisy to anyone meeting her. And so much so that that's what everyone, my family and all our British friends, call her. So, in fact, when we got married, we sent out an email to save the date to our friends. I used her real name. And I got by return of email a lot of friends saying, "Who the hell is this? Who's that Carmen person? What's happened to Daisy?
Who are you dating?"
Yeah,
now?
Well, exactly. Yeah.
Where did she go?
One and the same.
How proud was she when you put up the sign that says the Daisy? What was that moment like on stage?
You know,
Street?
I think proud, very proud, but not because of its association with her name. Proud just because we were one step closer after a fairly arduous journey to getting our restaurant off the ground and open. We were both proud, but not so much because of the name association, just because it represented our new venture together.
Mm-hmm. So 8 years later, you guys came together and were married after that first party in 1995, Mike Tyson.
Yes. We got married in 2005. December the 31st was actually our legal wedding. And we partly did that because we thought we'd never forget our anniversary. And needless to say, we've forgotten it pretty much every single year since. The other things, New Year's
Eve.
Do
you mark that as your anniversary?
Well, no, because we had two weddings. We had one which was our legal wedding, the one in December. And that was just the two of us on a beach in the Caribbean. Literally just two of us. We got a couple witnesses from a nearby hotel and got married on the beach. I'd secretly hired a steel drum band to play Here Comes the Bride as she stepped onto the beach.
Cool.
And then we had a larger wedding the following summer in Scotland where friends and family were invited, and we kind of did a more formal event then. So we kind of, that is really when we mark our wedding from the one where other people were present.
How has food and wine and drink, restaurants, how has that played into your love affair with Carmen and your life with Carmen? How big of an influence is dining out in restaurants? You've mentioned it a few times.
I mean, being two people who, prior to our world in life in restaurants, did jobs which allowed us to be at home a lot of the time, our relationship evolved in restaurants. I mean, both before we were married and then since marriage. Our favorite thing to do is to go to a restaurant and have a good bottle of wine, mm-hmm, while away a couple of hours.
More than a couple hours, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Describe your perfect day at a restaurant. I love this.
Lunch starts at 1 o'clock and ends at roughly 10 o'clock.
You had many of those, Dr. D? Those 1 o'clocks to 10 o'clock?
Well, that's what lunches should be.
Yeah, that's great. I love that. Okay, so
we can do that in the Daisy, by the way, if you choose.
Yes. Yeah, it's perfect for that.
Yes.
Describe the, before we go to break here, describe what the Daisy, if you walk in, what that looks like for someone that's listening, hasn't seen it yet, if you can.
Clean and inviting. I mean, it's quite a large space, and we've embraced some industrial look, so to speak. The ceilings are all uncovered, and you can see all the pipes and the venting. But it's pristine. I mean, you know, beautiful wooden floors, kind of whitewashed oak, and it's just a lovely space that embraces you and invites you to come hither, I would say.
Certainly does.
Yeah.
We're talking with Dominic Sheck of the Daisy. We'll be right back after this break.
Open in October. Welcome to the Daisy, a fun and casual environment in the heart of downtown Santa Barbara's Cultural Arts District. Great food, great feel, great friends. With friends, or make some new ones while eating thoroughly cooked and carefully selected foods. Fabulous wine and beer selections, house-smoked meats, plant-based foods, farmers market produce, and nuanced flavors. A place to sit and drink a cup of coffee while reading a book, but also a place to go with a group of friends for a night of great food and wine in a vibrant atmosphere. A sophisticated yet laid-back vibe. The Daisy, 1221 State Street in Santa Barbara. On the web at thedaisyrestaurant.com. On Instagram, the_Daisy_restaurant, and Facebook at facebook.com/thedaisyrestaurant.
This is David LaBrava, and we are live in 5, 4, 3. Coming right at you on The Jeremiah Show, KZSB 1290 on your AM dial. Check out my podcast coming up. Check out the interview. It's trying to help some people find a better way.
I kissed the poison on your lips till I was paralyzed. chemicals are burning right between my eyes. All that you left me was a number on the back of my hand.
Welcome back to the Jeremiah Show. We're talking with Dominic Shayek. He is the owner of The Daisy here in Santa Barbara, which is opening here in October, end of October. Thinking around Halloween,
Dominic? Yes, hopefully. And certainly before the end of October.
Much anticipated. Okay, so we're talking about Carmen and you when we left for break. Really got to know each other over parties your friend Linda would invite you to, right? Yes. And set up for you. And
yes.
Long afternoon lunches, mm-hmm. that lasted it well, yep. into the evening. You hope that people at the Daisy experience those same types of long extended cafe lunches, yep. more of a kind of a European style way, yes. of eating and drinking,
yep.
right?
Yep.
What were your earliest memories of food back in this idyllic childhood that you experienced, folks and socializing?
I suppose summers in the south of France have particularly kind of intoxicating memories for me, because it would be not just my immediate family, but uncles, aunts, cousins. And it was actually a very humble little home, which had been in the family since before the war. The family had a rather nice home, but it was sold when war came. And accidentally, they'd forgotten to sell what was the gardener's cottage. So the gardener's cottage was our summer house, and it was very, very humble, but tents were in the garden, and my family was all quite young at the time, so people didn't mind. And we all would convene underneath the teal tree, which is a large lime tree, where meals were had, both lunch and dinner. And again, there would be 15, 20 of us, maybe having come back from the beach in the morning or something like that. And, you know, big bowls of mussels and lovely freshly bought bread and quite simple lunches, but just wonderfully fresh ingredients. Tomatoes, my grandmother grew tomatoes, I beg your pardon, on the vines attached by the house. And just really good, simple ingredients. It was very kind of peasant society in the early 70s in south of France. And simple, and you had to go to different stores to get your different things you wanted to make your lunch or dinner out of. You didn't go to a supermarket in those days. You got your bread from one store and your meat from another one, and we would all do these things together. I mean, and so we would, you know, we were handling food at a young age, helping clean the beans or whatever it might have been.
Going into town, going to the market.
Absolutely, absolutely. And indeed, my parents, who live in France half the year now, still, that's where they get their produce from. It's the most magnificent street markets. I mean, they're there to this day.
Yeah. What town was this in France?
It was near Cannes, about 20 minutes inland from Cannes towards Grasse. Mm-hmm. Now they've moved a little bit further westwards because that golden triangle of the kind of Côte d'Azur has become very overrun, and it's very crowded nowadays, and it's lost some of its charm.
Was the style of cooking in those days the classic French cooking?
It was very Provençal. The southern France is much more rustic and simple, the food. It's not like Parisian cooking. Mm-hmm. It's not the same degree of nuance. Ratatouille is a classic dish from Provence. We would have ratatouille. It would be one of the things we'd have at virtually any meal. You know, there'd be plates of different things like that. I mean, or a plate of just simple tomatoes and onions with some Niçoise olives and just a drizzle of olive oil and vinegar. Simple lunch is just a lot of things, basically. Cheeses always.
Long, lazy days of summer.
Yeah, and wine, of course, accompanied by flagons of wine.
We're talking with Dominic Shayek from the Daisy Restaurant, opening here on 1221 State Street in Santa Barbara.
Open in October. Welcome to the Daisy, a fun and casual environment in the heart of downtown Santa Barbara's Cultural Arts District. Great food, great feel, great friends. With friends, or make some new ones, while eating thoroughly cooked and carefully selected foods. Fabulous wine and beer selections, house-smoked meats, plant-based foods, farmers market produce, and nuanced flavors. A place to sit and drink a cup of coffee while reading a book, but also a place to go with a group of friends for a night of great food and wine in a vibrant atmosphere. A sophisticated yet laid-back vibe. The Daisy, 1221 State Street in Santa Barbara. On the web at thedaisyrestaurant.com. On Instagram, the_daisy_restaurant, and Facebook at facebook.com/thedaisyrestaurant.
Take us with you in your car, to the beach, or to the gym. You can find all of our shows on iTunes/podcast/The Jeremiah Show.
What's up, guys? My name is Lennon Silvers Lee, head chef of a sushi bar in Montecito. You're listening to The Jeremiah Show.
Welcome back to The Jeremiah Show. We're talking this entire hour with the Daisy owner, Dominic Shiak. And when we left Dominic, you were a filmmaker, and you were traveling the world as a documentary filmmaker.
Yes. That's what I trained to do. I loved films all my life. Obviously lived quite closely to them with a father in the industry. And went to film school. Initially, I went to USC, but that was not very successful. And so I returned to the UK and went to film school in the UK. After film school, documentaries was an inexpensive way into the industry, in a sense. I mean, you don't need a huge crew; you just need a camera and a sound man, and off you go. You need some finance too; you need to raise a bit of finance. But more than anything, documentaries was something that enabled me to travel and to see the world. Something I'd always done, and I now needed someone to finance those desires for me. So that's what I did for a number of years, I didn't specialize in any form of documentary. I'd do anything that enabled me to go. So, for example, I went to South Africa for some months in the early 90s, just before the end of apartheid, to make a documentary about South African soccer. I made a documentary in Brazil in the favelas about sightlessness, unnecessary sightlessness. I would make a documentary in Chile about an eclipse of the sun. So basically anything that engaged me.
Some of that sounds dangerous. Do you ever get in any trouble?
Yes. I suppose the most scary thing that happened was actually in Brazil. We were in the favelas one day, which are lawless. I mean, they're literally, there's no vehicles. They're very steep sort of. They're not like American streets and roads. They're very kind of like, it's like a maze and a labyrinth, basically. So, we were in the favelas shooting, seeing some of the horrendous conditions in which people live. And within seconds, we were surrounded by about eight young boys, I'd say 12 to 14 years old, each with an automatic weapon pointed at us. And yes, that was scary. Wow. Yeah. Our guide was a woman who worked in our hotel, who let these boys know that we're causing no harm. Indeed, we were there. What we were doing would assist them. So once that was explained, we were left alone. But scary. And again, in South Africa, in the townships in Soweto, again, my cameraman had a knife held up to his throat, and things happen. But you know, I was young, and that's
brave.
Part of it. Yeah, not really, just stupid, probably.
So
naive.
You're young. So that led to, you did film for quite a while. How did you transition to the hospitality culinary
world? Well, okay, I did direct two movies. I'm not going to plug them, but they are available somewhere on DVD.
Alan Smithies?
No, I kept my name on them. In fact, actually, my first movie starred Christopher Plummer, the Oscar-winning Christopher Plummer. I'm quite proud of the first one, not so the second. Anyway, Steven Spielberg wasn't beating down my door for my directorial services. So we decided to move to New York and ring the changes, to move to a magnificent city, which is New York, but also for me to work in theatre for a while, which I actually soon discovered Broadway theatre anyway is probably even less creative than Hollywood filmmaking. It was rather frustrating. So while in New York, after discussing things with my parents, I decided to go to NYU and the French Culinary Institute and study the business of running and operating a restaurant. It's something that I'd thought about, toyed with in the past, and it's something like my father had always dreamt about, and indeed he's vicariously living through me now as we open the Daisy. And in fact, when our son was born, James, we lived in Scotland for a year. We sort of divorced ourselves from all reality. But while in Scotland, Carmen and I set about cooking every single day, and in the Highlands are not the restaurants we were used to attending, so we had to do it ourselves, unless you want to eat deep fried Mars bars every day and fish and chips, which we didn't. So we married Carmen's skills in the kitchen with my training, I got, so to speak, and moved back to the West Coast to raise our son in this magnificent town and open a restaurant.
Are we going to see a Daisy in Scotland one day?
You might do. You might do.
Little pop-up?
Yes.
Pop-up
maybe Daisy? London first, I suspect.
Okay, well, we come back from the break. We've only got a few more moments with you in the radio version, but we will be going to overtime in the podcast with Dominic Shiak. He's the owner of the Daisy that's opening up here on 1221 State Street. Giving out all the information here at the break. We'll be right back after this break.
Open in October. Welcome to the Daisy, a fun and casual environment in the heart of downtown Santa Barbara's Cultural Arts District. Great food, great feel, great friends. With friends, or make some new ones while eating thoroughly cooked and carefully selected foods. Fabulous wine and beer selections, house-smoked meats, plant-based foods, farmers market produce, and nuanced flavors. A place to sit and drink a cup of coffee while reading a book, but also a place to go with a group of friends for a night of great food and wine in a vibrant atmosphere. A sophisticated yet laid-back vibe. The Daisy, 1221 State Street in Santa Barbara. On the web at thedaisyrestaurant.com. On Instagram, the_daisy_restaurant, and Facebook at facebook.com/thedaisyrestaurant.
And in the middle of the night, I may watch you go. There'll be no value in the strength of walls that I have grown. There'll be no comfort in the shade of the shadows thrown. You may not trust the promises of the change I'll show, but I'd be yours if you'd be mine. Thank you.
Don't miss an episode of The Jeremiah Show. You can find all of our shows on iTunes/podcast/The Jeremiah Show.
Hey, this is Camilla Cleese, and you're listening to The Jeremiah Show.
The Jeremiah Show soundtrack is always original, every single show. Did you know there are 10 original songs for each episode? The music on the show is a running soundtrack in my life. I'm always listening to new and original voices that inspire me. I listen for hooks in a song. I listen for melodies that add emotion to our show. If you listen carefully to the 10 songs, you will also find a subtle theme that underscores my guest's vision or just how I feel that day. If you'd like to hear one of your songs played on the show, email me at jeremiah@thejeremiahshow.com. Welcome back to the Jeremiah Show. We're talking with Dominic Shayek. He is the owner of the Daisy, and one of the things I think that you're most proud of at the Daisy, Dominic, is your beer and your wine program. I know that you spent a lot of time.
Well, absolutely.
I mean,
that I actually get some say in, because as far as the menu is concerned, although I am consulted, is much more Carmen's purview, basically. But front of house, where the wine and the beer is sold, that is something I've got into the trenches, and it's been brilliant. I mean, let's face it, there are an awful lot of very, very good local wine and beer producers here in Santa Barbara, yeah. And it's environs. I mean, as far down as Ventura and up to Slough, there's a huge choice. And so I've sampled an awful lot of those choices.
As far as homework goes, it's a pretty good homework
even at 10 o'clock on a Monday morning, yeah. Which is for some reason when we tend to do most of our tastings, one's palate is alive at that stage of the day.
Is very extensive. Your palate is very developed.
Well, it's a privileged palate, certainly. In that I've traveled an awful lot and I have indulged my kind of gluttony throughout my life, both in terms of food and drink. I'm not an expert, but I have a wealth of experience. Let's put it that way.
So, what are some of the things that we can look forward to? I mean, what makes you stand apart?
Well, okay, one of the things which we are doing, which if you come from San Francisco, you might not be unfamiliar with this, but we are. We'll have 16 wines on tap, and I don't think anyone's doing that down here. There are places which have wine on tap, but it's normally two or three. They are front and center in the Daisy, and it's all part of the vibe we're trying to create in the restaurant. We want everybody to eat as good food as available and as good drinks as are available, but we want to be informal about it. We want to be democratizing the process of serving wine. Often wine can be intimidating to some people, especially if it's a French wine, you don't know what varietals they might be. And this way, I think, demystifies it and makes them quite approachable. We will have additional wines for those people who do want wine out of a bottle. But the great thing about keg wines is that you can bring a quality of wine at a better price.
Mm. So I'll see you there at lunch, won't I, Dr. D? Will be the front and center on that Italian marble bar.
You will be standing behind me in line.
Whatever. As long as I get something. Okay, we do have to say goodbye here, unfortunately, on the radio to the radio listeners. Thank you so much for listening. Dominic, final words?
Yes, well, thank you guys for having me. I probably ought to say thank you primarily to my contractor, who's been absolutely brilliant, Brian Bergacker of Bergacker Construction. And I ought to say thank you too to my landlord, Seema, who have been understanding in the endless process of permitting in Santa Barbara.
And don't forget your wife.
Well, that goes without saying.
Okay, everybody, join us in the podcast. We're going into overtime. If you ever wanted to know, we're going to ask Dominic a couple questions about what it's like to open a new restaurant. If you ever had any questions on what that is like and what are some of the process, some mistakes that you can avoid, you'll find out next. We're also going to talk a little bit more about the concept in the podcast, so you don't want to miss that. Tune in. And everybody out there, listen more, communicate, and evolve. Have a great week, everybody.
Backbeat, the word is on the street that the fire in your heart is out. I'm sure you've heard it all before, but you never really had a doubt. I don't believe that anybody feels the way I do about you now.
This is comedian Maz Chobrani, and you are listening to The Jeremiah Show on AM 1290 KZSB Santa Barbara. This is it, man.
Hi, this is Cole Robbins with USA Surf Team, and I am here on The Jeremiah Show. Feel free to reach out to me on my Instagram at Robbins_Cole, or you can always find me with Village Properties, and that is ColeRobbins@VillageSite.com.
Do you need help with your restaurant or hospitality business? See how we can help your business at HJLRestaurantAdvisors.com. Check out our website at TheJeremiahShow.com. We are on iTunes and SoundCloud. Please subscribe on iTunes, podcast The Jeremiah Show. Did you like our soundtrack? Find all of our soundtracks on Spotify, The Jeremiah Show. As always, a big thanks to Dr. D for making our voices come alive on the airwaves, and to our station manager, Les Carroll, for letting us on the airwaves at all. Be sure to check out our very own Richard Dr. D. Dugan's Peabody Award-nominated radio show, Tell Me Your Story, every Sunday at 7 a.m. and again at 7 p.m. Thank you for listening to The Jeremiah Show with Caroline, Shaylin, and Dr. D. Listeners, we appreciate you and want to hear from you. Please send us your ideas at ShowJeremiah on Twitter and Instagram. The Jeremiah Show is produced by executive producer Jeremiah Higgins. Special segments producers Caroline Peacock and Shaylin McHugh. And sound engineer Richard Dr. D. Dugan. Have a great rest of your week, everyone. Evolve.
The clouds, the colors are red and yellow and fire. The clouds are beautiful, the most beautiful.